We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, as is often the case this time of year, enormous news dropped. Like, the second we hit the stop button on this recording, Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, going to USC. It's a shockwave that many folks didn't see coming. We certainly didn't when we recorded this episode early Sunday morning. So, yeah, we didn't talk a whole lot about Lincoln Riley leaving in this episode, but if you want our reaction, go on out to the YouTube channel. We did a 45-minute live Insta reaction video. If you want the audio of it, you can also go on out to verballers.com. We posted it as podcast audio for our Patreon subscribers. Obviously, this is something we're going to talk a lot more about, as well as the news that Billy Napier was officially taking the Florida Gators job. But for now, back to the show we recorded detailing a crazy rivalry week.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man. I'm 40.
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo.
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand, that fine gentleman over there, the bowler in chief of the Solid Verbal, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You're acting as if I abdicated my duty. My chair, my responsibilities, my throne as a co-host of the show, because I went bowling last night. They did have the games on at the bowling alley. I was not that good, but I did have some truffle fries. Net win. I'm good, Ty. We called it Surprise Saturday. Surprise Party Saturday. That somebody's going to be partying.
Yeah, we didn't settle on anything. So we said Surprise Party Saturday on the preview show. And then on the stream that we did on Saturday morning, we were kind of, you know, sniffing around sneaky. Sneaky something Saturday, right?
Right.
In both cases, we were pretty much on the scent, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think just big picture, it came very close to, or it was, in fact, like there was some kind of breakthrough, right? With the number of times Oklahoma State have lost to Oklahoma over the years and the infrequency with which they win Bedlam. And then, of course, Michigan beating Ohio State at home in the pseudo snow, in the cold, the way that they did it. There is some sort of breakthrough or, you know, monkey off your back. That's not an S. I don't know if there's a monkey that starts with the letter S that you can think of off the top of your head? So whatever it is, I think that theme was apt.
Oh, very apt. Yeah. Nice neck crack for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. Great neck crack for Oklahoma State. We'll get into those games and much, much more. Thank you for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. While you're there, read the articles that we post 3 times a week. Also, make sure you subscribe to the show. That helps, especially as we get into bowl season and we start talking about the game that we may or may not play. We'll talk about that in a few weeks.
Correct.
Also going out to solidgiveaway.com if you want to enter for your chance to win an RG3 signed mini helmet. It's free to enter. Just got to go through a few steps to get your hat in the ring. What else am I forgetting here, Dan? Oh, verballers.com. However could I forget about verballers.com? That's how you can get access to our teaming community of verballers. You get access to this show early. You can also get access to video versions of this show. You get access to Discord server, the bonus episode that we put out on an ongoing weekly basis. There's a lot of meat on that proverbial bone, Dan. Go out to verballers.com, verballers.com, and check out what we have to offer. But it's rivalry week! At least it was.
Yeah.
Shall we start where we always do?
Squirrel Monkey Saturday. That's as good as I could find with an S. That's what I've been doing these past few minutes, seconds. Squirrel Monkey Saturday. And, you know, team's acting squirrely. The monkey's off the back. Yeah, let's do it.
Here are your week 13, your rivalry week reverbs. Have a listen.
Rebels! Rebels! That's me standing outside with a turkey leg in my mouth, shouting for the Rebs. Lane Kiffin, greased up like a hog, but I'm a Reb, and we beat the dogs. Go Rebs, go. Hotty toddy, happy Thanksgiving. You're welcome, America.
Dan, Ty, this is Andy from Atlanta, Georgia.
Dan, Ty, this is Ron from the Bay Area.
Dan, Ty, Brad from Cleveland, Ohio. It's been a very long 10 years, and all I got to say is, it's great to be a Michigan Wolverine. It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine.
I'm calling on behalf of the Michigan Wolverines bus drivers. Can anyone give me directions to Indianapolis? Go Blue.
Did you know that Hassan Haskins can't be stopped by time or space or human beings? Go Blue.
Dan, Ty, this is Doug from Albuquerque. Now that Ryan Day's on the hot seat, can we talk about who's going to replace him in Columbus? Go Blue, baby. 10 years in the making.
I'm an adult and I'm feeling something bad. Something feels like pain after losing to Michigan, and I don't know what to do with myself.
I guess you could say this just wasn't Ryan's day.
Go Blue, baby! Come visit Josh from Ann Arbor. I'm running through a field in my socks in the snow because Michigan just beat the Buckeyes!
My voice may be shot, but my heart is very full right now. Who said this wasn't a rivalry? Go Blue!
Just watch my upstate Mountaineers grab the trusty plunger and kick Georgia Southern back down the mountain.
Dan, Ty, help. The Florida State game is still stuck in official review.
Dan, Ty, I'm just here to settle the solid verbal for 2021. Neither Notre Dame nor Oregon were worthy for the playoffs this year, but only one had the temerity, the gumption, nay, the prowess to go to Leland Stanford Junior University and emerge victorious. Dan, losing to Stanford deserves the shame bell. Go Irish.
Hoorah, hooray, I-O-W-A. Go Hawks, baby.
And I just wanted to congratulate the Hawkeyes on their backdoor Big Ten West Championship. Be in Indianapolis. Go Hawks!
As an Iowa fan, I'm stoked to be in the Big Ten Championship. But I still believe that the 2021 Iowa Hawkeyes are the most unwatchable and painful view of any 10-2 football team in the history of college football.
Hey, this is Dan in Minneapolis, and it looks like the old oaken bucket's staying in West Lafayette where it belongs. But at least it's basketball season where the Hoosiers haven't beat the Boilers in like 2,000 days.
It is 3:40 a.m. here, but I can rest easy knowing that I have just watched the soon to be episode of a movie about Coach O's career. Go Tigers.
Hi, Dan and Ty. What's your favorite way to slow roast a badger? Sky you ma, baby. Go Gophers.
James Franklin just iced his own kicker. That's it.
We won Bedlam, baby. Hoax won. First time in a long time, but we did it. Sorry, I'm exhausted. I just took off running down the street. Think I made about a quarter mile. I don't even care. Cowboys won.
The day after Thanksgiving, Brady Hoke and San Diego State served up a reminder of the age-old adage, the backup is better than the starter. Go Frisco Bowl. Go Dogs.
You know, technically speaking,
Georgia Tech had a better passing offense under Paul Johnson. Go Dawgs, baby!
Can the backup coach be better than the starter? Because it sure looks that way in Charlottesville.
Somewhere, Wile E. Coyote is laughing his ass off. Go Mean Green.
I graduated from Michigan, and my wife graduated from Ohio State. We've been together 9 years, and for the first time in our relationship, I'm sleeping on the couch tonight.
Look at
there
you.
There you go.
Look at you.
Sleeping on the couch. Thank you to one and all for calling in, giving us a piece of their mind here on Rivalry Week, a lively batch of reverbs as ever, Dan.
Simeon Saturday is what I've settled on, by the way.
Like Simeon Rice?
Yeah. Well, also, it's a primate is a simian.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Was not aware. Either way.
Yeah.
It was one of those weekends, Dan. We had of course, the big Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. We had a lot of calls calling in favor of Michigan, or just at least talking about that game. The Iron Bowl was unexpectedly close. The Bedlam game last night was close. All of the headlining matchups that we discussed on the Wednesday show were very close. It was a great rivalry week. It was a great week of college football. I was glued to my TV.
Yeah.
From whistle to whistle, I was glued to my TV.
It was great to be a largely impartial person. I did watch my team win a rivalry game. Your teams don't fully have those emotional rivals. But for basically everybody else, it was kind of heartbreaking, or kind of like sweat through your shirt and be relieved, because there wasn't, like, unless you're a Kentucky fan. If you're a Kentucky fan, you're like, it was great. It was wonderful. They showed the game in 280p and I had a wonderful time. But yeah, they're few and far between instances of, I think, fan bases who are either not crazy disappointed or not just relieved beyond anything they could have imagined. So That to me is an exceptional Saturday, Friday, Thursday.
Oh, it was a great weekend of college football. Let's start, though, with the headliner. With the snow, with the crowd, with the stakes, I found it impossible not to just be fully immersed in the Michigan-Ohio State experience, at least to the extent that I could, from the comfy confines of my living room.
Yes.
This one lived up to the hype and much, much more. I thought Gus Johnson was going to hyperventilate like 8 times in this game, Dan.
Always.
Gus Johnson was the perfect guy to call Michigan-Ohio State. It was clear, I thought, from the jump, and I typed this in our Verballer Discord.
Yeah.
It was clear from the jump that Michigan's game plan was working. And it was, frankly, the exact kind of game plan that they needed to run in order to have any chance of winning this game. Their opening drive, if you saw it, was really impressive. They just marched down the field. In general, I'd say even if you didn't see the first drive, you don't need any kind of great football know-how, experience, insight to see what was going on in this game. You just watch the offensive line after the snap for Michigan, and they were getting a great push off the ball, like 2 yards down the field. A great push off of pretty much every snap, certainly in the running game. And I kept waiting for that to change throughout the course of the game. And it never really did. Michigan ran for almost 300 yards. They had 6 touchdowns on the ground, 5 of which came from Hassan Haskins, who had 169, I think, really tough yards.
Yeah.
And was truly the engine that led this offense to 42 points. And frankly, Dan, it was the same story on the other side of the ball. Defensively, again, Michigan generated a ton of pressure up front. They had C.J. Stroud under duress for most of the game. Aiden Hutchinson, the standout lineman, had 3 sacks. He was in the backfield all day long. C.J. Mm-hmm. Stroud got his. He had almost 400 yards passing, but the offense was unbalanced because they had to rely so much on the passing game.
Yep.
And with Michigan getting pressure on Stroud, with Michigan taking away a lot of the downfield stuff and keeping the game in front of them, it really put Ohio State's offense in a bit of a bind here.
It was Harbaugh porn. The Michigan offense was Harbaugh porn. The Michigan defense looked a lot. I mean, look, you go back to Stanford, right? It's a more modern version of what Jim Harbaugh succeeded with, and I guess early on David Shaw succeeded with at Stanford, in controlling the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And Stanford had those great, I think it was Trent Murphy. You know, there were guys there at Stanford during his tenure and sort of the crossover. It was getting after the quarterback, and it was 5, 6, 7 yards at a time. I think the Michigan running backs, Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum, finished at about 7.5 yards a carry in this game. How many third down attempts did Michigan have? 8? Were they 5 of 8 on third down that they weren't even getting to third down because they were blowing Ohio State off the ball? And the big difference to me, by the way, look, it's the pass rush is incredible for Michigan. The running game, they, you know, was able to control things from the jump, by the way.
Yep.
That Michigan didn't fall behind 14-0 and claw back in perhaps a tedious way or something like that speaks volumes to the preparation, you know, the offensive coaching room, whatever. But also that Cade McNamara, when asked to, other than that early interception thrown into triple coverage after Joel Klatt begged him to throw into the end zone. He's like, he's got to take a shot to the end zone here. Takes a shot to the end zone.
Quadruple coverage, right?
Interception. Yeah. Other than that moment, Cade McNamara hit on his shots. Hit on his shots downfield. Hit on his whatever 3rd and 7, completing a 9-yard hitch or whatever. That to me is the difference. And, you know, Michigan, how many penalties did Michigan commit? 2?
Yeah.
3?
Compare that to Ohio State, who had 10 for 66 yards. There were some big penalties grouped into that 10. You know, some costly ones that really did come back to bite the Buckeyes.
And this is a Michigan team, as we talked about, even though we had our doubts about them doing enough to win this game, I think we both took the points but had Ohio State winning, if memory serves. The reason we thought Michigan could hang was they are not an especially mistake-prone team, right? In special teams miscues, in fumbles, and interceptions, right? Cade McNamara, for all of his lack of a high ceiling, doesn't make a ton of mistakes, keeps Michigan in these games and puts them in a position to win. So Michigan, all season long, made winning plays. The question was the firepower. And with how Michigan was able to blow Ohio State off the ball on both sides of the ball, but especially on offense, you know, 4 minutes left, Michigan needs to move the ball downfield to drain clock. They just keep pushing them around. It was Michigan ready to play in 4 quarters, not 3. Not 3 and change, 4 full quarters. It was the depth. It was the offensive line preparation and health and effort. And Michigan was, is, and remains the better team in 2021. To win how they did was nothing short of crazy impressive. And I'm sure Ohio State, you know, all their fans, like, back to the drawing board, fire everybody. And they were already going to hire a new defensive coordinator, obviously, with how Kerry Coombs was demoted after the Oregon game. But I maintain, sometimes very good teams lose to other very good teams on the road.
Sure.
This is not the end of the world for Ohio State. CJ Stroud will get better. They will get better against the run. They will play smarter. They will play more efficiently. But in a year in which they probably had the best receiving core in the country, they might end up in the Citrus Bowl. Right?
Well,
if Iowa somehow beats Michigan in the Big Ten championship game, it does feel like a bit of a wasted year given the ceiling of Ohio State's offense.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm big on looking at box scores, not to give me the full context of a game, but just to get a good data point. You know, the stats matter, but I think if you take a box score in total, it can tell you a lot about the story of a game. It's not true in all cases. It was true in this one. If you hide the scores and look at the box score alone and look at what Michigan did, Cade McNamara, 13 of 19. You look at Hassan Haskins, 28 carries, 169, 5 touchdowns. You can see Michigan did what Michigan does. Michigan was true to form in this game. And it worked. To their credit, it worked because they got the push in the trenches. They weren't making costly mistakes throughout the course of the game. And Jim Harbaugh finally gets the monkey off his back.
By the way, Aiden Hutchinson, can we just...
Oh, he's incredible.
Doth cap? Like... What a year in which it's not even a conversation about who has the better defensive line and more and scarier defensive line, even though, you know, down the middle, Michigan isn't where Ohio State has been up front. But for Michigan to have the game changing rush and ends in this matchup, it's novel, it's new, and it was an enormous difference.
He was in the backfield all day.
Yeah.
All day. They really had no answer for him. And again, credit to the lines. On the Michigan side. Here's where things stand now for the Michigan Wolverines. They've won the Big Ten East for the first time under Harbaugh, and they are headed to the Big Ten championship game to face Iowa. We'll talk about the circumstances that landed Iowa in Indianapolis here a little bit later once we get into the Big Ten. But Michigan's about a 10-point favorite going into that football game. There's obviously a lot of letdown potential coming off the win here against Ohio State at home. Iowa is many things, but if you make mistakes, Iowa can punish you. We've seen it happen a couple times this year.
They force mistakes, to be clear. They're not just sitting back and waiting. They force a lot of those mistakes.
They force mistakes. I'm curious to see if Michigan will jump Alabama because of the game we're about to discuss. But
sure.
Your final score, 42-27, a huge win for the Maize and Blue.
Enormous.
As they've got their season in front of them. Win, they're in, and they'll have a crack at this playoff thing.
Mm-hmm. Jody was very confused when Ohio State let Michigan score. She's like, wait, hold on. What are they doing? What are they doing? Is this a trick? I was like, no, they just want clock. They just want time.
So that was the first big game of the day. The first one that definitely sent a shockwave through the college football landscape. The next one was very surprising. Of course, I'm talking about the Iron Bowl. Alabama 24, Auburn 22 in four overtimes. Dan, this game took
forever.
Forever.
It did take a long time, yeah.
The headline here, I think, is what Auburn's defense did to Alabama's offense. Also, what Alabama did to itself with 11 penalties. We can talk about that, too. Alabama had 68 yards of offense in the first half. They were out of sync all game, due in large part to Auburn's pass rush dominating the Alabama offensive line.
Yep.
There was also the issue of Jameson Williams getting knocked out early in the game. He was on punt coverage. He went down, tried to make a stop, got booted for targeting. So the combination of getting beat in the trenches, losing your best playmaker, that was just a little too much for Alabama to overcome, to be honest. Talk about a lot about Alabama's crazy depth, but losing Jameson Williams definitely seemed to hurt them. They never really got in sync. Bryce Young did his part to try and get them back in this thing, but this is a 10-3 game until the very last minute when Bryce Young pulled off some heroics, Dan. How much of this game did you watch, and what were your impressions as we're going through this thing? Because I'm waiting like for it to happen. We've seen it before where a team's got a 7-point lead on Alabama, and then suddenly, whoosh, they just kind of zoom into the lead, and it's over before you know it. This one, never happened. It never materialized here, which caught me off guard.
I watched all of the game. It was a very frustrating game to watch in that the offenses couldn't stay on the field, and that was largely because the defenses really came to play. Both of these fronts were sensational. Alabama just happens to have more depth as Auburn's ran out of gas. And I don't know if that's a recruiting issue, if that's a transfer issue, if that's an injury issue, if that's an all-of-the-above issue. But clearly the Auburn defense, which came to play up front and getting those big stops on third and short, fourth and short, whatever, it just... that you can only do it for so long. And for Bryce Young to drive 100 yards, Auburn forced Alabama to win this game. They did not give this game away. Now, the overtime strategy, you can talk about whatever.
Mm.
But Auburn did a great job. It's a backup quarterback in TJ Finley who made enough plays, and he was under fire. The offensive line for Auburn was not great.
He couldn't walk at the end, Dan.
I know. All of his pants seemed like they were missing. I know he rolls them up over his knee. He was wearing bike shorts out there. But all the same, an impressive, admirable effort from Auburn at home that, you know, ultimately they can't get that stop at the end. It was Ja'Cory Brooks, who I believe catches the ball over his shoulder from not close, from a farther out
yards.
Throw. Yeah, from Bryce Young. And Alabama does enough. That, I mean, that's your classic clunker win. Alabama was able to win its clunker. And look, whether it happened against Arkansas, whether it happened against LSU, sure, you can win multiple clunkers and end up in the playoff. That happens. But for them to win this game where they didn't, did they not get on the board until the fourth quarter? They were shut out for three quarters, correct?
It was 10-3 going into that last minute drive when Bryce Young led the 12-play, 97-yard drive, capped off by the 28-yarder to Ja'Cory Brooks, yeah.
Right. I'm always terrified with those huge extra points, right, where they have this crazy drive and they throw the potential game-tying touchdown, but they still have to kick that extra point on the road. What could possibly happen poorly in the kicking game for Alabama? Yeah.
They had problems with a hold earlier.
Yep, they backup holder.
Yeah, kicking has not been the strong suit for Alabama.
Well, you have a bone to pick.
Well, I do. But I have some other thoughts first. I want to give credit where it's due.
Also, by the way, Brian Robinson out. Like, he played well, but he left injured late in this one. Like, there are a number of questions. Now, luckily, Jameson Williams was ejected first half, correct?
First half.
So he will be playing in the SEC championship game. So that's a bit of relief, I suppose.
Correct.
Your other thoughts are as follows.
Well, I mean, credit where it's due. Auburn took away the running game. You mentioned Brian Robinson. They took away the run game. They forced Bryce Young to throw it 51 times. It was not an easy day for Bryce Young. He got the job done in the end, but only completed about 50% of his passes. Auburn was very good in pass coverage. And on the other side of the ball, you know, we're talking a lot about Auburn here, and it's going to be overshadowed, I think, because of the closeness of this game. But the Alabama defense deserves most of the credit for this win.
Sure.
Auburn scored one offensive touchdown in regulation, and that came on a short field after the targeting foul against Jameson Williams that I mentioned before. Auburn had 160 yards in this game.
Yep.
TJ Finley was sacked six times. He could barely stand by the time this thing ended. And Auburn, you know, to their credit, they kept trying to run it. They wanted to have a balanced offense. It didn't really work. I mean, Alabama was really good on defense. Will Anderson was everywhere. Just a machine. Auburn had a punt 10 times. So, again, you look at the box score, you're thinking, hey, got to like where we stand here if you're Alabama. But Auburn was really feisty.
You were not a fan of the Alabama offensive line, the right side of the line.
Oh, they just kept running at him. They got bull rushed every play.
Yeah.
I felt bad for Bryce Young.
I don't know if you saw the quote from the Alabama offensive side of things where Bryce Young was, I think he talked about how it was unexpected that Auburn dropped into so much man in covering Alabama. There are kind of 2.5 ways to play coverage. You can drop into zone, you can drop into man, and you can play kind of a matchup zone where you pass off guys. That's oversimplifying, of course. But to not have a plan, to not have seen that, and to not have been able to react to that, and I don't know if that's a Bryce Young thing, I don't know if that's a Bill O'Brien thing, but certainly they looked lost on offense.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, the credit goes to Auburn and the ability to confuse. But what a game.
What a game. I want to give a quick shout out to my boy Brian Harsin.
The creamy, creamy sausage cream you get from Mr. Saucy. How refreshing, delightful.
You know, I didn't know if he talked about this at all in the post game. So maybe there was a reason he did what he did.
Right.
Why didn't he go for two? In overtime. Yeah. At home, your team is clearly running out of gas at this point. Your quarterback's on like a wooden leg at this point. You got the home crowd, your hated rival, and a chance to go for two and win the game. He kicks the extra point.
Yeah.
He kicks the extra point. I know it's the popular thing to do to criticize the coach when it comes to two-point conversions or fourth down conversions or punting or what have you. But have some balls, man. What was that? You could have won.
You're saying you would like to inject some courage into Brian Harsin.
Come on, man. Clearly, they had a two-point play that they could have used. They did that awesome throwback.
They did.
A series or two later, you could have used that play. Man, what an opportunity.
I'm with you.
What a failed opportunity for Brian Harsin here in the biggest game of his season.
Yeah, man. If you're listening to Ty and Matthew McConaughey, you have that green light. You have that green light opportunity available to you, and I'm with you. I'm with you to seize opportunities, and given where Auburn's offensive line was, where TJ Finley's health was, given the opponent at home, right, Auburn's at home, on the ropes like it was, I'm with you, and there is, you answer to a certain faction of people that are going to say, no, you do the right thing.
Oh,
you
just hang shut around. Up with the right thing. The right thing is to win the game.
I'm with you. But it falls on him if it doesn't work. Whereas
they're not going to fire him. They just fired the last guy.
Well, we'll see.
He's going to a bowl one way or the other.
I know, but there's other circumstances.
Come on.
They're not going to fire him, but things look, it's Auburn.
Oh,
things heat up.
Go for two, man. Go for two.
I'm with you. I'm with you. But there is that old-fashioned line of thinking where you hang around and you play not to lose. I'm with you.
Gag me. This was the only thing, maybe the only thing, the two-point decision that could get Gary Danielson to stop talking about Tank Bigsby not going out of bounds.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Anyway. Auburn's 6-6 in year one. They're going to go to a bowl. Good for them. And Bama goes to the SEC championship game. They're going to be about a 6.5, 7-point dog against Georgia next weekend. We'll see what the status is for Brian Robinson. Alabama gets the job done 4 overtimes as they go to penalty kicks in this new overtime system. 24-22 is your final.
Yes.
And then at night, there was the Bedlam game. Another one. Man. I'm going to lose my voice here.
By the way, find a sports writer who didn't tweet out some version of truly Bedlam.
Truly Bedlam.
Yeah.
37-33. A phenomenal game and had a little something for everybody, whatever you're into. You like playmaking on offense? We got that.
Muffs.
Good special teams, bad special team. They got all of it.
Yeah.
The brand of crazy plays and miscues that defines a rivalry were all on display. Both teams trying to hang on for dear life in the second half. Yeah, the muff punts, the fumbles, the interceptions, all that stuff in the second half, Dan. I watched this game live. I was glued to my TV. You watched it, I'm assuming, in most of its entirety this morning.
Correct.
After your bowling exhibition last evening. What was your takeaway on the rewatch?
On the bowling or on the rewatch?
No, on the rewatch of this game. We could talk
because I nearly had a turkey in 2 separate instances. My takeaway was, what a bonkers entertaining first half. And I always get a little bit sad and exhilarated on another level when we have special teams miscues and turnovers, and came away crazy impressed by Oklahoma State's ability to adjust on defense.
Yeah.
Oklahoma doesn't get in the end zone on offense in the second half, correct?
Nope.
So to get out foxed by Oklahoma State's defense there's no shame in that. It's an excellent defense. But we had talked about, was it Brennan Presley, who is the returner for Oklahoma State? We had talked about him heading into the Iowa State game, the one loss for Oklahoma State, and that he could be an X factor because of how poorly Iowa State plays on special teams. He has a sensational return for a touchdown, and he also has a pretty costly, ultimately not for a loss, miscue as well. Spencer Sanders made winning plays. He made mistakes. But Oklahoma State was a team better prepared to make winning plays, be it the experience at quarterback, be it the ability on defense to adjust and get stops, for Oklahoma State to play as well as they did and Oklahoma to make the mistakes they did. Now, Oklahoma State won this game, but the Sooner mistakes on a day in which they had crazy runs, in which they put themselves in position to win this game on multiple occasions. You know, my hat tipping has been the theme of the show so far, but Oklahoma State to hold on and win like they did, awesome for them. An awesome experience and a truly heinous one if you're a Sooner fan, I'm sure.
This one is from ESPN Stats and Information, Dan. The Sooners faced their most pressured dropbacks since ESPN began tracking the stat 10 years ago. 26 pressured dropbacks.
And that was the story early on with Spencer Rattler, too, that people were very quick to blame him, and he did make mistakes. And we talked about the lack of explosion plays and the running game not being there early on in the season. The story is the offensive line is not where it's been these past
years.
No,
and it was supposed to be maybe the best offensive line in college football going into the season. It just has not performed. In this one, 6 times Caleb Williams was sacked. And that's an accomplishment because he's shifty as hell.
Yeah.
So to bring him down 6 times to pressure him all game... you know, the Oklahoma offense, despite that near comeback, as he said, didn't score at all in the second half. And Jim Knowles got the job done, just brought him in waves, kept bringing the pressure. And that definitely took the Oklahoma offense out of sync. Caleb Williams, I thought, did okay, all things considered.
Sure. Especially with his lack of consistent playmaking on the road in this spot specifically to make plays. He's a good player.
He's a good player. He didn't have a whole lot open downfield either, so he was doing his best to try and buy time until somebody could get separation, but Oklahoma State did a good job keeping pass coverage very tight. I want to credit Spencer Sanders, too. You know, I dunked on him a couple times throughout the course of the season. I don't think it's unfair to say that he's been inconsistent, because he has at times, but will say that the box score does not do him justice in this game, because he was a straight up dude. I hope he's in our dude alert segment at the end. He made some great plays with his legs. He was the team's leading rusher. He looked confident throwing the ball. He had 2 picks. Like, one of them was his fault, I guess. He's got a long release. He telegraphs where he's going with it. That's not great. It may not be great if they play Georgia in the playoff, but he got the job. This is a big game, big home spot. Yeah. It was clear he came to play. He looked confident. He looked agile, mobile, hostile in this game. and they get the job done. All that being said, Caleb Williams still had a chance to steal it away from the Pokes late. He couldn't get the job done as Oklahoma State wins. And now it's an interesting scenario for them. They're 11-1. They head into the Big 12 title game. They're going to go against Baylor again. They will be a 6.5-point favorite in that ball game. I think they win and they're in. I think that's what it comes down to. Oklahoma State, in my view, gets the nod over Notre Dame. They'll have two top 10 wins to close out the season in the event that they beat Baylor. It'd be hard to leave them out in that scenario. But
Baylor with, a backup quarterback, right? It's shaping again.
I would assume so, unless Gary Bohannon comes back. But you have to like Oklahoma State's chances of getting through to the playoff. On the Oklahoma side, there were rumors floating around yesterday on Twitter that Lincoln Riley might be off to LSU. He put a pretty quick end to that in his postgame comments saying he's not leaving for LSU. So Oklahoma's going to have a long offseason to think about 10-2. 10-2 is still a pretty good record, but I don't think it's out of line to say that it's a disappointing 10-2. They definitely expected to be playing for the Big 12 title, if not the playoff.
Gary Bohannon was questionable against Texas Tech, ultimately didn't play. So perhaps his status is more intriguing now in the the Big 12 championship game. You have to think that they rested him thinking that giving him another week would be beneficial.
And let me quick mention Cincinnati here. It may not have been one of the headlining matchups of the weekend. They played this one on Friday, but it is significant because Cincinnati keeps winning. They won 35-13 over ECU, a good ECU team that was 7-4 going into this one. It was never close. Since he led 21-3 at half, they had a nice block field goal for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. So flashing a little bit of skills on special teams. Luke Fickell, congrats to him. 12-0 season. They have 11-1 Houston on deck in the American Championship game next week. Houston crushed UConn for what it was worth, but they had previously clinched their spot in that title game a couple weeks ago, I guess. Since he's going to be about a 10-point favorite.
Man, 11-1 Houston. Dana Holgorsen very quietly.
And very quietly good on defense, which is new for Holgo.
Yeah. Well, he had some good defenses at West Virginia, but not, it's not his reputation for sure.
This will be a significant game because I think we have arrived at the point where since he wins, they're in.
The assumption with the lack of faith right now in Alabama up front on offense and health issues, whatever, going against Georgia, there is a presumed second loss for Alabama. And so Cincinnati in an ideal place, all things considered. You're right.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's jump over to the Big Ten, Dan.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about the scenarios that led us to a Iowa appearance.
Man.
In the Big Ten championship game. Iowa wins the Big Ten West. So first and foremost, they won their game on Friday against Nebraska. 28-21.
God.
It was the final act of an impressive season of losing very close games for Nebraska. They blew a 15-point lead in the final 20 minutes. Iowa scored 22 unanswered. They won this game by 7. It's the first time in 82 freaking years, Dan, that a team has lost 9 games by single digits, which is amazing. Just almost impossible to do that. So you feel bad for them. It's an amazing stat. I think this means we get a full offseason of chatter about how, you know, Nebraska was just a heartbeat away from 9-3. Could have done
Nebraska's not fluent in winning, right? If there's no Rosetta Stone during a season to learn how to win. The special teams is so atrocious. The ability to close a game is so atrocious. The ability to maintain a lead is so atrocious. They're not fluent. It's like they were dropped on Mars and expected to speak Martian and have no idea. Have no idea where to even begin to look. This is not, they are not surrounded by teachers. And so it was an impressive opening salvo for Nebraska. What did I texted you the, what was it? The sequence, punt blocked / caught for a touchdown, handoff exchange fumble, safety, 3-and-out, game sealing interception. Now it's Logan Smothers, right? He has not been in these spots. He's not been in these moments. But again, it's a fluency thing for Nebraska.
He looked pretty good, I thought, Logan Smothers.
He definitely looked good early on. Yeah, he completed a bunch of passes downfield, looked comfortable. But yeah, man,
he's fast. He can run.
I mean, Alex Padilla got benched in this game, did he not?
Yeah, the Padilla experiment, the Padilla flotilla.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
taking
if it's
taking on some
gonna,
water.
Yeah, I don't, it's taking on water. I don't know if it's gonna it's gonna make it to Indy, but you know, Iowa, despite all its limitations, and despite all the dunking we've done on the Hawkeyes as of late, I mean, we both picked them in this game. First off, but Kirk Ferentz finishes with 10 wins again. It's the 7th time Kirk Ferentz has done a 10-win season. They win the
Big
10 West.
It's fluency in winning, though, isn't it? Isn't that what it is? Aren't they just like these opposite teams that like Nebraska has flash and does good things, and Iowa struggles mightily on one side of the ball, but chicken wire, duct tape, some putty.
It's tortoise and hare.
It totally is.
Kudos to Iowa for getting the job done, winning, getting the Heroes Trophy over Nebraska, 28-21, your final. They go to the Big Ten title game because Wisconsin lost by 10 on the road at Minnesota. They lost the Paul Bunyan's axe game. If you covered up the score, I talked about the box score thing before. If you covered up the score and just looked at the box score, you're going to see that Graham Mertz threw it 38 times. And if you see Graham Mertz throwing it 38 times, you know something went wrong.
Run.
You know something went wrong. And in this case, it did, because Minnesota stopped Braylon Allen.
Yeah.
Wisconsin has been doing really well as of late, largely on the legs, on the back of 17-year-old Braylon Allen. He had 47 yards of this game.
Mm-hmm.
He has 47 yards. Graham Mertz has to throw it 38 times. Great things don't happen when Graham Mertz has to throw it 38 times. Wisconsin did not have an offensive touchdown in this game. So Minnesota came to play. They stopped the run, forced the pass. They took the Badgers out of their element. And they got a strong performance out of Tanner Morgan in the second half.
Sure.
Like, game manager extraordinaire, Tanner Morgan led 3 scoring drives, got Minnesota to 8-4, which was very quiet. Speaking of quiet outcomes for a season, a quiet 8-4 outcome for Minnesota.
Sure.
They knock Wisconsin out of the Big Ten West title spot, and they send Iowa to Indy to square off against Michigan next week.
Minnesota being an Illinois and Bowling Green loss away from 10-2, first of all, not to you say a quiet 8-4. There were wins left on that table. To not go 10-2 because of Illinois and Bowling Green is insane. But otherwise, a crazy impressive performance. I've been using that phrase today, crazy impressive. But Joe Rossi and the job he's done with that defense the entire season, basically the entire season, has been terrific. They fully stopped, like you mentioned, Braylon Allen. And it is now of my opinion. It is now my opinion. I'm of the opinion that given the last 2 years, and I write off a little bit of 2020, of course, But if Paul Chryst does not make wholesale changes to this offense in the offseason, Wisconsin's an unserious program. Wisconsin's not serious about evolving, improving, adapting. And my belief is that Wisconsin is a big-time program. But if they are not re-examining what they do on offense... Now, keep your identity of being a power-run team, but right. How you do it, why you do it, when you do things, what your identity is in terms of play calling, unserious program if they are not making changes. I'm not saying fire this guy, fire that guy, but back to the drawing board, because the Wisconsin offense this year in bigger games has been a nightmare. There's no reason Wisconsin shouldn't be competing with schools like Michigan and Notre Dame and Minnesota at the end of the year, and they are heading the wrong direction as a program right now. And so they need to stop that and get ahead of where things are going. If not, okay, be a 7-5 team. Be an 8-4. That's fine. If that's who you think you are, make peace with it, and let's stop talking about Wisconsin as anything more than that.
Wisconsin loses. Big loss.
Yeah.
The axe goes back to Minnesota. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, I'll just rifle through these scores here. We can circle back as needed. Michigan State 30-27 over Penn State in the Snow Bowl. Had a bunch of guys out with the flu. Still Penn State lost, which we can discuss. Illinois 47-14 over Northwestern. At one point in this game, I typed into our Verballer Discord that I thought Illinois might get the 70. Just minimal resistance from the Wildcats in this one. And Maryland gets bowl eligible by a 40-16 margin. Big games by Talia Tungavailoa.
Tungavailoa.
Ty and Fleet Davis. Maryland powers its offense to its sixth win of the season. Where do you want to start?
Man, obviously Illinois. Illinois is on a fast track to being like leftover ribs in your teeth. Like, you just can't shake them. You don't want any, like, oh man, we're going to have to bring out the good
five
floss.
Five and seven for Illinois.
Yeah.
So they don't make a bowl, but they beat Nebraska. They beat Penn State. They beat Minnesota, and they could have beaten Purdue. That was like a 13-9 clunker of a game.
Look, it's not Brett Bielema's roster. It's just not.
It's not his offensive line. We know that.
Correct. He doesn't take any responsibility on what the offensive line does. No, Illinois is, I mean, especially with how they ran the ball. Yes, I mean, it's Northwestern. But Josh McCray is a really fun back to watch if you haven't done. I don't think he led the team in rushing yesterday, but he's shifty and runs hard. And so he's been fun to watch. And the bigger picture with the Big Ten, aside from, of course, Michigan beating Ohio State and the implications of Iowa winning and Minnesota winning as it relates to the conference championship game in Indy in a few days. Michigan State in the snow. There were flurries in Ann Arbor, but in East Lansing,
this was snow.
You were actually worried because Michigan State was wearing green on green, and it turned out the Penn State white on white was the bigger issue in terms of clarity of watching. I mean, speaking of like Minnesota being what Illinois and Bowling Green away from 10-2, do you know what Penn State is?
Ugh.
How far away Penn State is from going 10-2 with the 9 overtime game against Illinois, with not being able to capitalize on a short field at the end of that Michigan game, and then just handing the ball back to Michigan State on 4th-and-1s, a game in which Sean Clifford actually threw the ball well in the snow. This was an offense that was able to move the ball in pretty horrid conditions in East Lansing. And I think it was 2 separate 4th-and-1s at midfield. Penn State, and look, they pinned Michigan State, right? They made Michigan State drive 99 yards. Michigan State did on one of those. Again, this is situational football. I don't know if it's a Mike Yurcich thing. I don't know if Sean Clifford told the coaching staff, my hands are frozen. I can't catch a snap. I can't do anything. Maybe that's the case. Doesn't seem to be the case, though, with how he was playing generally yesterday.
No,
we can talk about that horrid scramble as well near the end of the game. But not a great decision.
No.
But why play football? If you have 4th-and-1 in a huge game at the end of the season against, I don't know if Michigan State's a rival, but it's a huge game. It's a ranked team. And Penn State has that opportunity to keep drives alive and move the ball. I know that the offensive line hasn't been good, you know, clearing lanes for yesterday was Kevon Lee. But you don't have like an offensive GA. You don't have a video coordinator scouring college football for largely effective 4th-and-short plays and have that at your disposal to just sort of run an RPO where you flip it to a tight end or hit Jahan Dotson at a slant or, you know, have a counter. What? You don't have that on 4th-and-1? I use the word unserious to talk about Wisconsin. What Penn State did offensively this year indicates to me that they are not ready to make, you know, you were criticizing Brian Harsin, the kinds of decisions and the kinds of winning decisions that are needed to justify this kind of, and it's not even a financial investment, it's just an overall investment in James Franklin being the future of this program.
It's a disappointing season. They were 7-5, and it was 7-5, I think, based largely on small margins. You know, you look at the season, and I don't think you can really point with any great confidence to any one thing that was terribly wrong. Now, the running game, we've talked ad nauseum about the running game. The running game is not where it needs to be. It did get better as the season wore on, but, you know, outside of that, they're pretty good on defense. I think Sean Clifford, when healthy, was pretty good, threw the ball pretty well. Jahan Dotson was a superstar, will be a first-round draft pick, so there's a lot to like there. But you're talking about a lot of stuff on the margins.
Well, you're talking about an Illinois team on the margins, a Michigan State pass defense on the margins. You know, like,
this game was a good microcosm for what they've been dealing with this year. Special teams issues, they had problems on short yardage. You know, coaching decisions in cases sometimes sets them behind the eight ball. So, yeah, I understand if people are going to question the James Franklin extension. I get it. It is a disappointing campaign. You know,
by the way, don't look at that total salary. Don't look at that $75 million number.
It's a three-year deal.
Number.
It's a three-year contract.
It's just a tiny extension. Well, not tiny, but
contract.
It's an extension. Yeah.
So Penn State's got some soul-searching to do here in the offseason. They finish 7-5. They'll go to a bowl game. I don't know who they're projected to play. And if you're Michigan State, look, I mean, we're talking a lot about the Penn State thing, but was this not the ultimate exercise in Michigan State disrespect? Because they won the game at home with like 20 guys out. 20 guys out because of the flu.
Yep.
And they go 10-2.
Yeah. The loss to Ohio State was not indicative of a team ready to secure a playoff bid.
No. But whatever your opinion of Michigan State, 10-2 with losses to a pretty good Purdue team and Ohio State.
Not in pretty fashion. And then, destroyed by Ohio State. Whatever. Who cares? Michigan State was a good team, had a good season, is going to finish in the top 15?
Yeah.
After the down years that they've had, after the completely listless offenses, they have one of the most electric running backs in the country and an above average quarterback. I don't know. Sorry. Throw some green and white confetti in the air. This season was a huge success. Oh, and they just completely destroy Michigan hearts in a win. It's a huge success.
What conference do you want to go to next?
Let's go to the ACC. ACC is wild.
Let's go to the ACC. So congrats to Wake Forest. Putting my hands together. Wake Forest, by virtue of their 41-10 destruction of Boston College, is officially your ACC Atlantic Division champion. They finish with a record of 10-2. Incredible season.
Yeah.
Incredible season for Dave Clawson. It snaps Clemson's six-year streak of winning the ACC Atlantic. So it's a big deal for the Wake Forest program. And it's significant in college football. I think you got to give credit to Wake Forest here. You got to give credit to them for taking care of business. They were only a 4.5-point favorite or something going into this game.
Sure.
So they've been dealing with a disrespect thing all year. They don't play a whole lot of defense in this one, actually. They did a pretty good job playing defense.
I was going to say, do you know how hard it is to score only 10 points against the Wake Forest defense at home?
Yeah.
Is the BC offense just broken? I didn't watch this game in detail, but they had Phil Dracovic, did they not?
Well, they had 19 yards of passing in this game.
This is a broken offense. I'm going to go back and watch this game, I mean, quickly, but I'm going to go back and watch to see exactly what happened.
Yeah, Wake Forest forced 3 turnovers, and BC had 19 yards of passing all day. It was never close. It was never close. So Wake wins 10-2. Kudos to them. They've got Pitt next week in the ACC championship game. BC, there will be a postmortem on BC. It didn't help that Phil Dracovic got hurt early with the injury. But 6-6. The random factoid about BC that I think warrants mentioning as we get into our bowl game, yet to be determined bowl game.
Right.
BC did not beat a team with a winning record all year.
Okay.
So 6-6, you win the games you're supposed to, but bear that in mind when it comes to some of the cross-divisional and cross-conference stuff that we're going to find here in bowl season.
Yeah.
Against better teams, BC has not necessarily been at its best.
No. And as soon as BC, if they do win 9 games, Jeff Hafley is gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Right.
Yeah, good for Wake. Wake somehow loses 2 games to ACC teams, but only one of them counts. Only one of them counts as a conference loss with the North Carolina non-conference scheduling. I don't know if that affects things in terms of a tiebreaker, but man, it's cool. Wake, given their depths to where they were before Dave Clawson, to win the Atlantic and take advantage of a down year for Clemson, even losing to Clemson, getting the job done, taking care of business, awesome story.
Pitt won by a 31-14 margin over Syracuse. 4 more touchdown passes for Kenny Pickett. 2 went to Jordan Addison, who is just a monster.
Yeah.
They can't
both
cover
those receivers for Pitt. Yeah.
They can't cover him.
And Pitt ran the ball really well, which was important because that'll continue to open things up as Pitt looks to, I think they have the clear road to a New Year's Six game. I think they'll be favored against Wake. I don't know if you see an early line here, but with how complete Pitt looks with the experience that they have with Kenny Pickett, if he's able to limit the mistakes, they're in prime position to go to whatever, the Orange Bowl, wherever the ACC champion will end up.
Yeah, I've got Pitt right now at about a 4.5 point favorite.
Yep.
Over Wake Forest in that game. We'll see what it breaks as a little bit later today.
Yep.
Clemson 30-0 over South Carolina. We had NC State in a fun one over North Carolina, 34-30 on Friday night.
unless you're a Tar Heel fan.
Unless you're a Tar Heel.
Up 9 with 2 minutes left.
Tough.
You're probably feeling decent. And then you're like, all we have to do is, you know, have a safety rotate over playing zone. That's all. I mean, that's day one stuff. Not necessarily. Where do you want to go of the remaining games? I mean, Clemson just ran all over South Carolina.
After all that, all the hand wringing, Clemson's 9-3. They're going to get to 10-3 after the bowl. Right now,
likely
Stu Mandel's got him in the Cheez-It Bowl against K-State. They will destroy K-State if they play K-State.
That's in Orlando, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to feel good about them getting to 10 wins. Kudos to South Carolina. Look, they weren't going to win this game. We knew they weren't going to win this game.
Don't give me kudos to South Carolina for getting shut out in a bowl game.
No, kudos to
South Carolina. I know they went, or in their rivalry game, excuse me, but yeah.
Kudos to South Carolina for getting to a bowl game.
I know.
I can't begin to emphasize how impossible it seemed at the start of the year. I've said it 1,000 times now. Stu's got South Carolina, for what it's worth, against NC State in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, which would be interesting matchup.
I can't believe that you're absolutely right that they got to bowl eligibility. And look, it's Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, Troy, and Vandy where they get to 4-4 and then that was 4-4, right? And then Florida and Auburn. If you told them before the season started, like, South Carolina's getting bowl eligible and they don't have a quarterback. No, they just don't. And the guy, presumed starter, he's hurt and doesn't play. And they beat Florida and Auburn and get to a bowl game. You're a South Carolina fan. Ty, you're right. Holy.
You're thrilled.
Moly.
You're thrilled.
Yeah.
Absolutely thrilled.
Yep.
The NC State thing, real quick, you mentioned it, but 2 touchdowns in 26 seconds for NC State. Good game by Devin Leary. Devin Leary's been lights out pretty much the whole back half of the season here, very quietly. 35 touchdowns on the season. That passes Phillip Rivers for the single season record for the Wolfpack. They finished 9-3, which I think you'll take that. I know they had their sights set a little bit higher, but a 9-3 finish for Dave Doran's a good job. UNC going 6-6. You know, they're going to have to adjust to life after Sam Howell, just as Sam Howell had to adjust to life after 4 of his guys went pro. I don't know what happens next with UNC. I know recruiting's been very strong for Mack Brown, but definitely a transition year coming in 21.
Did you see that? I think it was Spencer Hall said Mack Brown in his puffy jacket, watching his team choke away a clear win, looking like a Scottish coach who's about to get relegated.
Oh yeah,
like a soccer coach. Yeah, I was just like, man, poor Mack Brown cannot hold on to a lead. And it was a good enough performance. What, Josh Downs set a record for North Carolina?
Yeah,
going back, you know, 15 years or something like that. They ran the ball well. Do we now have a British and a Briton at running back in college football?
We have a British?
Well, wasn't that... Who was the leading rusher for North Carolina in this game?
Oh.
Wasn't it British Brooks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was British Brooks, British and we've got Britton Brown at UCLA.
That's right.
All right, I'm just saying, for all you you England people, that's a nothing deal. NC State, hell of a way to come back in this game, to go downfield, to be aggressive, and now the tri-state area is the cradle of quarterbacks in the ACC between Kenny Pickett, New Jersey's Kenny Pickett, Connecticut's Tyler Van Dyme, and is Devin Leary also from New Jersey? I believe he is.
I think so, yeah.
And so the cradle of quarterbacks, Sicklerville, New Jersey, went to Timber Creek High. So there you go, as we all predicted. The cradle of quarterbacks in the Trice area. But yeah, awesome for NC State. A very successful season, could get to 10 wins. And yeah, the ACC sort of all over the place. I don't know if Dino Babers is keeping his job. I sort of read somewhere that probably needed to go to a bowl game. And even though the offense took a step forward, yeah, we'll see. Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I was going to talk about them next.
Fought valiantly. Got that big stop.
29-24. They held the Hoos to 3 points in the second half. Even still, UVA had a run at this thing in the last few minutes after a strip sack and made it all the way down to the Tech 14-yard line and then turned it over on downs. So 29-24 was your final. You know, I wanted to say, we started doing in a losing effort. I want to say when we were at Grantland in 2011, if memory serves.
That's right. Yeah, because it was Nick Foles at Arizona throwing for like 400 yards and 5 touchdowns a game and losing. Yeah.
Not since Foles have we seen a quarterback like Brennan Armstrong, who every week is pretty much doing the same thing, where throwing for 400 yards, he's the entire offense. This team isn't as bad, in fairness, as that Arizona team, but every week it's Brennan Armstrong just trying to will the team to victory. He wasn't able to do it here. Still, they finish 6-6. I think they're on track to maybe play in the Sun Bowl. I think, I don't know if I'm recalling that correctly, against Oregon State, somebody like that. Virginia Tech's going to go to a bowl game. Obviously, they fired their coach. I did see they're projected to play Florida in the Gasparilla Bowl.
Great.
So, could be an interesting matchup, two coachless teams. But, good win for Tech, to say the least. You mentioned the Miami game. Miami won by 37 over Duke. They're at 7-5. Saw some projections they could be headed to the Holiday Bowl, which be a nice spot against ASU.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with ending up in San Diego.
Duke goes 3-9. Perhaps it's a chance to, I don't know, have that David Cutcliffe conversation.
I think the expectation is Duke moves on, I believe.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the SEC real quick. Let me rattle off. Let's go to Georgia 45-0 over Georgia Tech. Let's go to LSU with a nice win, 27-24 over Texas A&M. Florida wins the Sunshine Showdown by a 24-21 score. Ole Miss won the Egg Bowl on Thursday night by 10, 31-21. Arkansas knocks off Mizzou by 17. Kentucky big over Louisville by a 52-21 score. And Tennessee took care of business against Vandy. It was never close as Tennessee moves to 7-5, Dan. Real quick on the Georgia game, I'll just mention this.
Please.
Never close. It's been a rough stretch here for Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
They got outscored 100-0, literally 100-0, their final two games of the year against Notre Dame and Georgia. Stetson Bennett, very good through the air. 4 touchdowns. Only missed like 6 throws, or I don't even know if it was that many. They are 12-0. They're going to face Bama in the SEC title next week. As I said earlier, that's going to be about a 6.5-7-point game. We could talk more about that one on Wednesday, but no real surprise here in the clean old-fashioned hate game. Georgia Tech goes 3-9. They had moments this year where they were kind of frisky. I don't know at what point we start having the Jeff Collins discussion, but tough schedule, which maybe is something that he can use as a crutch to extend it another year. I don't know if there is any speculation about his future, but doesn't feel like they took that biggest step forward in 21, which is a bit concerning.
I agree. I mean, did they not lose 100-0 these last 2 weeks to Notre Dame and Georgia?
Exactly.
It's backup quarterback. I get all of that, but I need points on the board. Even in a rivalry, give me 3, give me 7, give me 10, give me 8, whatever. I understand what they're up against, but yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Tyler Beatty. If Eli Drinkwitz could have given the ball to him 65 times, he might have. If it were physically possible to just snap it to Tyler Beatty every single play and have him run forward, Mizzou would not have had much of a chance against Arkansas because KJ Jefferson is way better than what Mizzou has at quarterback, and Treylon Burks is way better than what Mizzou has at wide receiver. But, man, they really gave him some exercise, huh?
41 carries, 219 yards, and a touchdown. He was the SEC's leading rusher. That's because he gets the ball like 80 times a game.
Yep.
And, yeah, I think you're right. He was really the only consistent bit of offense for the Mizzou Tigers all season. Let me go back here to the LSU A&M game. This was one of those where I picked LSU, and I couldn't really explain why. Just kind of a gut instinct, maybe, with Coach O being at home, his last game at night.
Sure.
Max Johnson got sacked 6 times in the second half alone, and then bounces back to lead an 85-yard drive in the closing moments, throwing a game-winning touchdown with 20 seconds left to get this team bowl eligible. Just an incredible sequence of events.
A&M just wrestling the loss from the jaws of victory with the way that they lost this game on offense, the play calling, the inability to protect Zach Calzada, the inability to prevent LSU from scoring the way that they did. It's just ugly. And I don't know what it says about Jimbo. I don't know if with the backup quarterback situation, if A&M fans considered like this to be the year. But in terms of uncertainty within the West, beating Alabama, having down LSU, having improved Ole Miss and improved Mississippi State, but certainly not flawless, improved Arkansas, not flawless, where A&M has, if not the best defense in the division, it's right there. And to kind of waste it, I don't know how you're an A&M fan and you don't come away disappointed, obviously, with the result against LSU on the road. But overall, I don't know. It feels like a wasted A&M year.
And really good skill talent on offense.
Yeah.
Really good skill talent on offense to go.
I mean, they're not
four.
Deep at true receivers, but between Anaya Smith and Devin Achane, yeah, there are guys. There are definite dudes that are game changers. But, and Jalen Weidermeyer coming back. I don't know. It's just, Zach Calzada, just for 4.5 throws a game, you're like, all right, here we go. And then there are 11 where you're like, what's going on now? What? Where is it going?
Calzada Armada sails on. They're 8-4. They will go to a bowl game. We'll find out more, obviously, next week after conference championship week. The Florida State game was something. So there was a fight before the game. It was chippy all throughout. 21 penalties for almost 200 yards, and there were 6 turnovers. We got exactly what we paid for with Florida State. After all of the speculation, we did a thing on the preview show. We didn't know about Emory Jones. Emory Jones played for a little bit.
He did.
He played for a little bit. He was replaced for Anthony Richardson after he threw, 3 picks? He didn't
look
good.
3 picks, yeah.
In this game. Richardson was a lot better. Florida sort of dominated this game, sort of. The Noles made a late charge but couldn't get the job done, hoping to qualify for the bowl game. This is from AlligatorArmy.com, the great Florida site. Florida State's final touchdown drive, a 16-play, 96-yard death march, managed to drain just 3:06 off of the game clock, but took more than 23 minutes of actual time as recorded by humans in the real world to play out, with 6 penalties being assessed and 3 separate plays meriting replay reviews. I was watching my scoreboard app. I did not watch this one live. I thought that there was a glitch. I could not figure out what the hell was going on because I kept refreshing it. What's happening? Why is the clock not moving? Why is the clock not moving? This is why. They did a bunch of reviews. The Gators win for whatever that's worth. They get to 6-6. They're bowl eligible. Florida State finishes just shy of that with a 5-7 mark, Dan. But Florida was in control for most of this game.
By the way, 23 minutes is an actual TV show. That's how long a sitcom is generally when you factor in commercials to get to a half hour. Very nice win for Florida. And it's easy to say, okay, Florida State started 0-4, and you know they were a down team. Jordan Travis gets hurt in this one. Florida won this game. Somehow Damian Pierce got a penalty for having his helmet ripped off because he kept running. He kept participating in the play. Florida ends up scoring on that drive regardless. So impressive from Florida considering all of that they're down and the mistake-prone nature of the quarterback position this year. Florida gets to a bowl. They're going to be starting over. I think a lot of the smoke is around Billy Napier. And be curious to see the kind of staff he or whoever ends up in that job by the time, I mean, look, we're recording this Sunday morning. Well, you know, this is probably going to be an outdated take, but Florida getting that win, given what they were up against, good job. And obviously what Florida State's offense is without Jordan Travis makes it very clear that Jordan Travis is the MVP of this team because he can will them forward to success.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah, good for Florida.
Real quick, the Egg Bowl, Ole Miss defense played really well.
Held Sam Williams, man.
Yeah, held Mississippi State scoreless for the second, third, and half of the fourth quarters. Meanwhile, the offense ripped off 21 straight. Two short touchdown runs for Snoop Connor as Ole Miss completes a 10-win season. Congrats to them. Mississippi State finishes 7-5.
On the road in the Egg Bowl. Not easy.
No.
Uncomfortable win. Yeah.
Not at all. Kentucky won big. They had 362 yards and 7 touchdowns on the ground. On the ground, 4 of which belonged to quarterback Will Levis. They also shut down Malik Cunningham, who fought valiantly, eventually left the game with about 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
Just needed a lot more support around him, frankly, as they finished the year 6-6. Kentucky finishes 9-3.
Pick this one wrong. Definitely picked this one wrong. I thought the offensive momentum was with Louisville. What does Penn State look like with a combination of Will Levis and Liam Cohen this year? What do they look like running a lot more successful RPO action?
They probably run the ball a lot better, tell you that much.
I mean, I don't know if they can bring the Kentucky offensive line with them, but I would imagine they're a little bit more creative. And, you know, you substitute in Jahan Dotson as an upgrade to Wandale Robinson, who himself is really good. Man, crazy.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, good. Really, really impressive for Kentucky to do what they did against Louisville. So way to finish out the season. Kentucky can get to 10 wins.
Over in the Big 12, a couple games of significance. Baylor edges out Texas Tech 27-24. Mm-hmm. Iowa State big on Friday over TCU by a 48-14 score. Big game for Bryce Hall. Almost 250 yards on the ground. What did I say? Bryce Hall?
You said Bryce, but it's our guy, Brees.
Brees Hall. Excuse me. West Virginia by 6 over Kansas. West Virginia going bowling. And we had Texas. Texas edging out K-State by a 22-17 final. That one was also on Friday. Big game for Roschon Johnson. Let's start with Baylor. So Baylor's going to be playing in the Big 12 championship game because of the results in Bedlam with Oklahoma State winning. Blake Shapen got the start for the injured Gary Bohannon, who you said rightly at the top of the show was questionable.
Dressed on the sideline. So if it's a hamstring issue, just got to get that loose and ready to go for Oklahoma State. Because if Baylor is substandard at quarterback against Oklahoma State, it won't win.
I thought Shapen was actually pretty good. If it were soccer, I'd give him a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
There were a couple throws that he was lucky to escape. Mm-hmm. But there were plenty of other moments where I think he clearly showed that he's got a lot of talent. And he's young. Sure. He's still learning. I think he could be very good. The skills are clearly there. He's not going to supplant Gary Bohannon. If Bohannon is healthy for the Big 12 title or the bowl, Bohannon's going to be the guy. But I think if you're Dave Aranda, it's comforting to know you have a guy in shape and who's probably not going to lose the game for you. At worst, he's Calzada-esque. And you can live with that.
God, I don't know who that's an insult to.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Tech had a shot at this thing, though, I think is really the point that we should be hammering home here. They were able to move the ball in the Baylor defense. They had a shot at a 53-yarder to tie it at the gun. Keep in mind, Texas Tech won it on a 62-yarder at the gun against Iowa State 2 weeks ago. So a 53-yarder, you're thinking, you got it, no problem. Had the leg, did not have the accuracy as they finished this thing out 6-6 on the year. So they're going to go bowling. Sonny Cumbie is going to be the coach in the bowl game. He's going to stay on Joey McGuire's staff as offensive coordinator when he takes over at the end of the season. So a bit of continuity in Lubbock, which is nice. And look, what can we say about what Dave Aranda did, man? 10-2. The Bears are one of those teams that defied all the preseason expectations. I was crapping all over them in the preseason. Go back to July, listen to what I said. I was dead wrong. This was a good team. They were fundamentally sound. They beat Oklahoma State when they played earlier in the year. I don't know what happens on Saturday when they play again, but you got to like their chances given the way they've played all season. And I think this is a credit to Dave Aranda. You got to feel great, by the way, if you're a Baylor fan, that Aranda is I think, pretty steadfast in staying at Baylor. He's not going to be taking one of these open jobs. So you got to like where you're at right now if you're a Bears fan.
I think so. And Texas Tech, obviously, with the two fumbles, I believe, in their own territory, one of which leads to a short field touchdown, the other a field goal. So 10 points off of short field turnovers is not ideal, but good for Baylor for taking advantage and, you know, winning a pseudo clunker and surviving. And you're right about Dave Aranda and the job he's done. And I love the aggression. If we're going to complain about the aggression or lack thereof with Brian Harsin and James Franklin, Dave Aranda has taken the opposite tact this year.
Aranda does not have that problem.
No,
Aranda,
I mean, he
does
did
not have that problem.
Last year he did.
Last year,
but
he did.
This year he is. He is do it, Dave. I don't know.
He is freshly shaven. He is aerodynamic.
Yeah.
He is all efficiency and analytics and whatever else.
Do it.
Yeah. No, he's not holding anything back.
No. So, good for Baylor. We'll see what they look like in the Big 12 championship game. No real thoughts on, you know, Breece Hall just absolutely dominated TCU, and they should have. Will Howard got the start for Kansas State, and it showed. Will Howard, Kansas State teams, nothing against Mr. Howard, but they are not a throwing team. They're not a downfield successful team when they have their backup quarterback in there. And he had a 70-yard touchdown run, something like that. He had another long one called back. And Texas, for all of the terror that Texas has inflicted upon college football eyeballs, especially Texas Longhorn eyeballs this season, tightening up in the second half like they did on defense, trusting their running game and Roschon Johnson, not making a ton of killer mistakes, even though they did go three and out a little bit too much. Good for the Horns for hanging on, making plays.
Absolutely. The only other point here on the TCU front, they did make it official that Sonny Dykes is going to be the next head football coach. It was sort of an open secret. We had Bruce Feldman on the show like 2 weeks ago, and at that point in time, it was sort of already known that Sonny Dykes was likely the guy who was going to be the next head guy at TCU.
As SMU loses to Tulsa,
by the way, Rhett Lashley will be taking over as a new SMU coach at the end of the season. Okay, over in the Pac-12, a couple games to discuss here. There's a bunch of action in the Pac-12.
Of course.
Let's start with your Oregon Ducks, Dan.
Let's.
The Platypus Cup, as we've come to know and love it here on the show.
Somebody, I think, because it's the Platypus Trophy, I forget if it was Addicted to Quack, some site said, "Got Oregon takes the Platy."
The Platy, I like
that. All in on the Platy.
I like that. 38-29. I did not watch much of this game outside the highlights, but you were messaging me that Oregon might lose when they were up 16.
Yeah. They were slowly letting the game drain away from them. I think they were up 31-9 or something at one point, and Oregon State was just moving the ball, it seemingly, at will. This defense is so beat up and gives cushions, and they're just open receivers running on 3rd and 7 all the time, tight ends, whatever, and Oregon State wins in a very specific way. I get that, and Oregon played really, really well on offense. They're not the most electric team, but they were pushing Oregon State around. Anthony Brown hit a couple of really nice throws downfield, especially one downfield for a touchdown to Devin Williams, and Oregon was clearly the better team, but they let Oregon State sort of creep back into this. It was a garbage time touchdown to cut it. I think it was 38-21, and they cut it to 38-29. But Oregon State, you know, they took advantage of an Oregon defense that has, I don't know, a ways to go, I would say, especially when they're as beat up as they are. I think they had a linebacker at defensive end at some point. They're all over the place. There was a questionable targeting call or a questionable review of a targeting call. It seemed like Verone McKinley may have targeted an Oregon State receiver. It seemed close to me, but would have been totally okay if he had been ejected. It was just that kind of bam bam and or bang bang play, and it was reviewed and reversed. So I guess Verone McKinley won't be missing the first half of the Utah game, the key member of that defense that's healthy, but they're down a bunch of dudes. you know, on offense, you know, they're without basically their starting receivers and still got the job done. Still got the job done in a rivalry game at home. Covered the spread, I believe. It was about a 7.5-point spread that they covered.
Yep, yep.
So good for the Ducks moving on to Vegas next week against Utah, who they just got trounced by.
They just got trounced. They are moving on to Vegas to square off against Utah. Utah won its game on Friday over Colorado. Colorado had less than 150 yards of offense, and Utah ran wild on the ground. Utah is a 3-point favorite in that rematch with Oregon.
Yeah.
They play that one on Friday night. Elsewhere, we had Wazoo 40-13 over Washington. Oh, my God.
Whew.
So this was sort of close for a half, but then Wazoo turned it on and it was over. They dusted Washington. Mm-hmm. Sam Huard got the start here.
Yeah.
Four picks.
Fresh.
Welcome to college football. Jake Dickert gets the job at Wazoo.
Yeah. Interim tag is off.
Interim tag is off. He did an admirable job leading this Wazoo team amid very strange circumstances after the dismissal of Nick Rolovich. 7-5 for Wazoo. I think all things considered, a pretty good campaign for them. Mm-hmm. Washington, I have not heard much in the rumors department as to which direction they may be headed with their head football coach, but I would expect that pretty soon we're going to hear something.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Kalen DeBoer smoke around the Washington job, which I think would be smart and savvy.
I like it. Okay, we had Notre Dame 45-14 over Stanford in a game that was never close. I think Stanford had like 6 passing yards at half or something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We had BYU in a good game, actually, blowing a 15-point lead in the second half and then rallying and winning 35-31 over USC as they finished 10-2. We had UCLA 42-14 over Cal, sort of a back and forth first half, and then UCLA with it in the second half. Good game for DTR, again 42-14. And ASU runs for 228 on the ground. And they win the Territorial Cup, 38-15. ASU finishes 8-4. Arizona 1-11. Dan, thoughts?
Yeah, UCLA shut out Cal in the second half. They just ran all over the hell Cal. And these are two teams coming off of rivalry games, so in a bit of a letdown spot. The game started out pretty slowly. Arizona hung around with ASU for a good chunk of this one, but ASU, of course, just too much on the ground. Didn't watch a ton of USC BYU because I like to be nice to myself, so I don't watch a lot of USC football right now.
Right.
And that defense, but
USC
BYU
looked
finishes...
okay. USC looked
Did
okay
they?
In this game. Yeah, they.
Okay.
I think all things considered, they look pretty good. Remember, they got drilled by UCLA a week ago. They don't look bad in this game.
No, they have the worst defense in the Pac-12, and I think we'll finish the season with the worst defense in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Which is a wild thing to think about. BYU finishes undefeated against said conference, the Pac-12. Yes. 5-0?
Undefeated against Pac-12, 6-1 against Power 5 teams. They go 10-2. Great campaign.
A hell of a year following up a historic season with the number 2 overall pick at quarterback and losing Jeff Grimes, of course, their offensive coordinator, our guy.
They were another team, much like Baylor, that folks were writing them off before the season.
Sure.
Because of turnover, you know, you lose Zach Wilson. That's a lot to replace, but... they have found a way. Kalani Sitake did a great job. 10-2 is a fantastic campaign.
And his name has rightfully come up for even bigger jobs. And I'll say this again. And, you know, I hear it from Iowa State fans. I hear it from Cincinnati fans. And maybe we'll hear it from BYU fans. Be like, he's not going anywhere. Maybe not. But you don't want a coach who is not rumored to be taking big jobs.
That's right.
Right? And I remember that going back to Chip Kelly, where he told his players at Oregon, who's like, it's because of the job we all do together that I am in this position to have job rumors about me. And so if you are a coach who's like, nah, we don't want him, there's no way this coach would be good enough at this school, then your team isn't that good. Your program isn't in a good spot. So it's a compliment to Sitake and the players and where BYU is right now as a program that his name is being thrown around with jobs like, you know, whatever, Washington, USC, some of those West Coast footprint jobs. Otherwise, in the Pac-12, Stanford, terrible season. I don't think they hit, what, it was a 3.5-point over-under? They go 3-9 to finish out the year?
Yeah, I think their over-under was 4.
Oh, okay.
If memory serves. Yeah, it wasn't high, and I remember being repulsed by that number, thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
Right.
But 3-9 for Stanford. They were very bad in this game. On the Notre Dame side, you know, Notre Dame's interesting. Notre Dame is going to be on the periphery of this playoff discussion.
Yep.
They did what they needed to do. They won handily in this game. They won handily the last couple weeks, trying to impress the committee. Now they have to do the thing, because they insist on being independent, or they just wait it out. And they sweat it out, and they give everybody else a chance to put their teams on display before the committee in conference championship week. One of these years, they're going to get tired of doing that, and it's going to come back to bite them. I don't know if they care as much about this year, because I don't know if they actively believe they should be in it this year. But now they're going to be at the mercy of what Oklahoma State does. And I do think it will come down to Oklahoma State. I don't think Indy's getting the nod this year. I think if Oklahoma State wins over Baylor, the committee has no choice but to put them in the playoff. It's a really tough sell to say, okay, Oklahoma State, you had two top 10 wins in the last 2 weeks, but we're going to go Notre Dame instead.
Sure.
Notre Dame gets ratings. They would get better ratings, but I think if you're being serious about this thing, it's tough to put Oklahoma State in. In all honesty, Notre Dame needs Georgia to beat Bama, and then they need loss. They need a loss by either Michigan or Cincinnati. Or Oklahoma
or
State.
Or Oklahoma State, right? Baylor's not going to jump Notre Dame. Yeah.
So I think there's still a good chance they could get in, but they definitely need some help because they don't play. So we'll see.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be wonderful for Michigan wins and Oklahoma State loses and Cincinnati loses and, oh, we have, 12-1 Cincinnati and 11-1 Notre Dame. And, like, who are you going to put in? Oh, should we put in the team that won at the other team on the road? I don't know. Notre Dame, though. Is Notre Dame getting in ahead of Cincinnati in that situation?
You know the committee wants to.
Of course.
Of course they want to. I don't think they should, because they did play head-to-head.
Yeah.
That's not to say Notre Dame has not gotten better, and that should be accounted for, but yeah, they played and Cincinnati won, and it's tough to overcome that head to head. Actually, in that instance, do you put both teams in? Because that could be a case to be made as well.
So Georgia, Michigan, Notre Dame, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
If Oklahoma State loses.
And Georgia wins.
Quickly, all over the sport. We had some teams getting bowl eligible. I know, Caleb Ellaby threw for a bajillion yards for Western Michigan, which their win against Pitt looks better and better, by the way. They beat Northern Illinois, who themselves had a very good season, I believe, extended their coach. Ball State gets bowl eligible with a win over Buffalo, who had to deal with a last-minute head coaching replacement, of course, with Lance Leipold moving on to Kansas. Fresno State big over San Jose State. I mentioned Kalen DeBoer and his name coming up for some big West Coast jobs. So an impressive year. They finish at 9-3. They can get to 10 with a bowl win, of course, if my math holds up. San Diego State with a very nice win. They end up in the Mountain West Championship game. They beat up on Boise State and shut them out in the second half at home. Technically at home. I think they play. Do they play in Carson? Where is San Diego State playing right now while their stadium gets built? I don't know. Central Michigan, a quiet 8-4 year. For, I believe, Jim McElwain's Chips. Yes.
Yep.
I saw, and I just see this because of Bowling Green. Bowling Green gets to 4-8, which, all things considered, not bad. They beat Minnesota. Scott Leffler was ejected a few weeks ago, I believe, a little while ago.
Yep.
Steve Adazio ejected for Colorado State in the first half, gets two unsportsmanlike sideline penalties. Guess who Steve Adazio hired to be his offensive coordinator at BC? That's right. The Adazio-Leffler combination are the two coaches who have been ejected from games this year. Air Force fully trampled UNLV, throwing zero passes, and as you mentioned, 511 yards on the ground. Very
decent.
Quiet 9-3.
It's decent
for Air Force.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as I scroll through and remind myself of things, UTSA, a darling. Is this the right button?
Meep, meep.
A darling of the solid verbal, get hounded up front by North Texas and the Mean Green with a disappointing year, but they get to a bowl game.
Dan, don't just go to Apogee Stadium in Denton, Texas and expect a win.
That's
against
true.
The Mean Green. You just don't.
Going to the D, the true D, Denton. Yeah.
Yep.
You mentioned Houston getting to 11-1 with an easy win over UConn, who finishes the season 1-11 as they begin the Jim Mora era. So there's that. Army does a very nice job on the road against Liberty, especially on defense, handling Malik Willis and Liberty, and Army just obviously running. Navy it's a good day for the Service Academy. They win 38-14 against Temple. Kent State gets to 7 wins after a brutal non-conference schedule and a shootout, an overtime shootout over Miami of Ohio. Dustin Crum threw for a bajillion yards this season. I think there was something like a combined 750 yards through the air in that matchup. Rice gets to 4-8 with a win over Louisiana Tech, who themselves are beginning a coaching search with the Skip Holtz era coming to an end as he rests up to replace Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. As we all know, App State are quiet. I'm saying quiet because I just didn't watch a lot of App State games, and that's on me. But 10-2, Chase Bryce, Mountaineers of App State get to 10-2, and they are finding themselves, I believe, in the Sun Belt Championship game.
Right. Next Saturday.
Coastal Carolina runs big, but they themselves will not be playing in a conference championship game. We mentioned Tulsa over SMU, a nice way to finish out the year for Tulsa after a very slow start. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
I think you've read off every game in college football.
I know. Memphis gets to 6-6. Nevada destroys Steve Adazio's Colorado State. I don't know how much longer he is for Colorado State. Also, I believe, and I'm going to confirm this right now, in the FCS playoffs, did Holy Cross not win?
Holy Cross won. The Crusaders won. Yeah.
Who did they play? Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
Come on. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Get
out
of here.
We might have to cover that as part of next week's preview show.
So Holy Cross, 10-2.
Fear the Crusaders. One more game, Dan. The Big Ten game of the week, presented by our good friends over at DraftKings. Dan, we talked about it on the preview show.
Yes.
The old Oaken Bucket goes back to Purdue.
It does.
44-7. Woo! Purdue caps off an 8-4 season to take back the old Oaken Bucket. This game was tied at 7 after the first quarter. And then Purdue ripped off 37 unanswered to win going away. Big day for Aiden O'Connell. Missed only 5 passes. Disaster of a season for Tom Allen, finishing 2-10 at Indiana. But the old Oaken Bucket, we both like Purdue in this game. DraftKings Big Ten game of the week on Wednesday. Just to circle back here, the old Oaken Bucket, yeah. Going back to West Lafayette.
Look at that. Good teams win. Great teams cover. Pretty savvy move from Tom Allen. You can only do a great turnaround job if you have a team that needs turning around. And so getting to 2-10 means it's time for your old classic Tom Allen turnaround job. What a job Tom Allen has done turning around this 2-10 team is what they'll say.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID. You bet $1 on any team to score and you'll win $100 in free bets if they score. If they score, you score. Promo code is SOLID. Use it this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You got to be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Dan, there's only one thing left to do on this marathon of a show here after Rivalry Week.
I knew it would be.
Let's get to it. Who are the dudes for Week 13 Rivalry Week?
I mean, I kind of went over them as we're doing it, but I do like that song enough. The combo of Aiden Hutchinson and Hassan Haskins for Michigan. I think Spencer Sanders, you demanded it, so I'm going to give it to you, right?
Definitely. Definitely.
Brennan Armstrong was in a losing effort, dude. Breece Hall was an absolute dude for Iowa State. Roshan Johnson for Texas in their winning effort. Shamari Jones for Coastal Carolina ran wild against, I believe, the Jaguars of South Alabama. Sky Moore, two Ys. Why? Why? Because why not? Sky Moore goes crazy. I'm very bad at these on the fly nicknames. For Alabama, is there anybody? Was anybody a dude in Alabama, Auburn? I don't know.
Will Anderson, but I think he's been retired.
I suppose. Hassan Haskins, I mentioned. Virginia Tech and just the offense in general coming through like they did. I would have dude there. I would say Jake Dickert for Wazoo, securing the job like he did, going 3-1 in Pac-12 play, getting them within an Oregon State win against Oregon of getting to the Pac-12 championship game, given all of the upheaval in Pullman. I would say there's a dude quality to him. Malcolm Rodriguez for Oklahoma State on that side of the ball for the Pokes.
All right.
I don't know. Anybody else that jumps out to you? Kenneth Walker, dude all year?
It's been a hell of a year. So here's where we stand, Dan. We've got one more week. It is conference championship week. I will rifle through the games very quickly.
Hit me.
Just as a precursor, the show's already long. But this is what we're going to go over when we discuss games on the Wednesday preview show. Friday night, Western Kentucky on the road in the Alamo Dome against UTSA. UTSA favored by 2.5.
That's going to be kind of fun. Western Kentucky, by the way, 47 second half points yesterday.
Yeah, that's the Conference USA Championship. 8 p.m. ABC, we've got your Oregon Ducks, the Utah Utes. They play it in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Utah favored by 3. Moving to Saturday, we've got Baylor, Oklahoma State, the Big 12 title game presented by Dr. Pepper, which means we get tuition throws, which we need to discuss on the preview show.
Always.
They play it at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Oklahoma State favored by 6.5. High noon, Kent State, Northern Illinois. That's the MAC championship game. They played at Ford Field, Kent State favored by 2. Also, we've got the Mountain West championship game, Utah State squaring off against San Diego State at 11-1. San Diego State favored by 4. They play this one at Carson. You are correct. 3:30, Sun Belt championship. App State, Louisiana, they play it in Louisiana at Cajun Field. App State favored by 2 on the road. Then we get to some of the biggins here. 4 p.m. CBS, it's the SEC game between Georgia and Alabama. Georgia favored by 6 at time of recording. That might go up. 4 p.m., American Championship. Houston on the road at Cincinnati in Nippert Stadium. Cincinnati favored by 10. Got the Big Ten game, all Lucas right. Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Michigan, Iowa. Michigan favored by 10.5 at time of recording. Then in the nightcap, also we've got Pitt, Wake Forest, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, Pitt favored by a field goal. And to close things out, it's not a conference championship game, but it's a late encore showing of Pac-12 After Dark. We've got USC, Cal. It was a postponed game earlier in the year because of COVID. I don't have a line for this game. I'm assuming USC will be a small favorite.
Bunch of rematches, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? Oregon getting trounced. Baylor losing comfortably to Oklahoma State. I believe Kent State won a shootout against NIU a few weeks ago. App State, I believe, got absolutely demolished by Louisiana. So, yeah, a chance for some teams to reverse some and exercise some demons, right?
A long show today, but well worth it.
Yeah, why not?
As we discuss every nuance of Rivalry Week here on the show, we appreciate everybody hanging with us for an hour and a half of good college football content, Dan.
Yeah. And if you want shows like these a day early, verballers.com.
Verballers.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Don't forget to go on out to solidgiveaway.com. Enter for your chance to win an RG3 signed mini helmet, Dan. We've got one more week of previews, Dan. One more week.
Of in-season-ish previews. Then we got bowl previews.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We will be back to preview Conference Championship Week on Wednesday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.